As we got into this UFO investigation, we, the investigators, came under tight investigation by somebody else and began to notice many strange and unbelievable things happening. Our telephones were tapped. Our mail was intercepted, and we were followed. Total strangers made appointments with us, or simply intercepted us and warned us to back off. We were picked up by special agents and questioned. We were stopped in different countries en route to and from Switzerland, and were interrogated and sometimes given instructions by one service, and then another, and then again differently by another, leading us to believe that they were not in contact with each other. Every time we visited the Meyer farm, we noticed that a military strong point was set up on the hill overlooking the Meyer house, with a clear view right down into the family living room. We received threats by mail and by telephone, and were occasionally intimidated in person. Whenever we went to one or another of the contact sites or photo sites where the UFO pictures were we saw low-flying reconnaissance spotter craft pass over our heads, and we even photographed some of them. It was quite obvious that we were the ones being watched. Meyer continued to press his advantage. He says, "You mentioned something in the last meeting. You told me that I could once come with you to the Pleiades." Sannyasi, "Surely? But this will only be a short part of a larger trip, because the aim, seen from Earth, is many light years distance." Meyer says, "My dear, this is fantastic. I only wanted to take photographs there. By regret, the last pictures have nearly all been about the travel to Saturn. Either they were overexposed, or the film was just black." Sannyasi says, "This unfortunately had to be expected, because you may need for such cases special equipment." Meyer says, "Nevertheless, I will try again on the next trip. If just some of the pictures would be successful for me even halfway, then I'm content." I wonder if these Pleiadians breathe oxygen. I wonder what is the right percentage of oxygen for them. And I wonder if the Earth was set up with that oxygen level, and if we have a common percentage of oxygen that's ideal for both the Pleiadians and the Earth humans. Sannyasi says, "Besides this, there is a chance that we will take you up with us again on the next meeting for a further special flight. More, we also want to see whether you are able to make certain pictures, for we have produced in this aim a special apparatus." Meyer says, "What shall I photograph?" Sannyasi says, "You will recognize this soon enough. But now my time is over again, for I still have to carry out different duties." On Tuesday, the 15th of July, 1975, at 9:46 a.m., one of the by now becoming familiar thought transmissions, the 30th contact, was received. This contact advised Meyer of and instructed him to prepare a longer absence for this proposed trip. Sannyasi says, "I have received your different thoughts, but could not respond immediately, as my present task occupies me very much. And as I now take up contact with you today, it will be, for certain reasons, for only a short time. Prepare yourself to be ready in the early morning hours of the 17th of July, which is within 2 days. At a given time, I will call you then and take you from a suited location. You should equip yourself with sufficient film material, as this will be of some importance. Prepare yourself further to be absent for a longer time, because you will undertake a further flight, which is not possible even to many space-traveling creatures. Within this universe are few forms of life able to overcome such great distances, because this is only possible through hyperspace. Where this has been made possible by advanced technical developments, the universe offers no limits. Also, space and time are no longer barriers, and so as well the barrier between universes can be negotiated. As you know from former times, so also are known time journeys for certain forms of life. Meyer asks, do you know these things? Sannyasi, surely, as asked, is well known to me. But please do not interrupt me because my time for this contact is very short. We will not be able to accomplish the coming travel in my small ship, as for such trips it is unsuited. We shall go over to a great space-fitted ship, so prepare for altogether at least 30 hours of your time to be absent, because this ship we will travel far outside the stars' formations known to... More also you should have an opportunity to make some pictures, and possibly to view from a distance the ancient home planet of our human races.
Oh.
Today it presents a peculiar sight, originating in the destruction of a great star. The destruction took place a very long time ago. Because of its unlike shape, this formation is called IHWH-HATA. This name means, translated into your language, Eye of God. According to your astronomical catalogs, you find this Eye of God within the stars of Lyra, and you call it the Ring Nebula of Lyra, or H57. These are the concerns I had to report today. If now you still have a question, then I have a short time to answer. Meyer asks, I feel myself placed into a kingdom of fantasy, Sannyasi, but tell me, where in the sky or heaven can I find this Eye of God? Sannyasi, to do this you need a bigger telescope. Sannyasi later explained that their ancestors and ours descended from the refugees from that great sun system, some of whom fled to the Pleiades and other places in their escape from destruction. Meyer says, a pity in respect to the planned journey. I still have one question. When I count the distance in kilometers, what is the number? Sannyasi says, it exceeds all your mathematical possibilities of calculation manifold. Telling the number which I could give you, but only in my terms, would in consequence be absurd. Meyer says, but then a few hours will not be sufficient. Sannyasi says, you forget about the negation of time and space by hyperspace. And Meyer asks, dear me, then this will become just a short trip to the end of the universe, a travel into eternity, so to speak? And Sannyasi says, your thoughts are wrong, for we don't reach an end of the universe, for such an end does not exist. The author says, apparently time and space as we understand them in our material universe are physical properties of our material continuum, which may be bypassed by raising the vibrations of the field with any protective field to a frequency above the physical chemical realm, where the laws and properties of the material world no longer constrain matter, and all in the field responds to the new laws simultaneously, such as for spirit. The big day, the 31st contact, was on Thursday, the 17th of July, 1975, when the Pleiadians picked up Meyer at a very carefully selected location at 10:14 a.m. for this 31st contact with the extraterrestrials in less than 6 months. Edward J. Meyer had made his plans as required, allowing for an absence of over 30 hours. He got up early and completed his preparations. He loaded his bike and waited for the signal. When it came and the rendezvous point was identified, he bid farewell to his family and started out for the remote and very inaccessible location, so difficult to negotiate, even with his moped, that it would certainly discourage followers. Arriving at the signified location, he unloaded the equipment he would carry and carefully hid his vehicle against accidental discovery. Shortly after this, the spacecraft arrived, and he was greeted by the now quite familiar extraterrestrial woman. He looked at his watch. It was 10:14, and he was immediately taken into the ship along with his equipment brought for the trip. They rose into the ship in a beam of energy, and it took right off on the greatest event in Meyer's entire life. After that trip, he was brought back to the same spot, retrieved his moped, still undisturbed, and rode all the way home in wonder and contemplation. He was totally exhausted and went right to bed and slept. After resting from the strain of all the excitement, Meyer got up, washed his face, and went out and settled himself at his desk in the little shed to receive the transmission. Suddenly he was tuned in and the transmission was received as before, rapidly, continuously, with no repeats and no stopping for corrections. In one long, uninterrupted run, until the first transmission was complete, he had filled scores of pages. Then he was allowed to rest for a day, and another segment came through the same way. This was repeated a number of times until the full account had been received and documented there on paper. Some of this contact had already been reported in the preliminary investigation report. More will be reported in a greater presentation of the Pleiadian messages at a future time. For our purpose, now, we shall abstract from the reports a little more of the time aboard the Great Spacer Mother Ship. End of chapter 4. I'm reading from the book UFO Contact from the Pleiades by Wendell Stevens, and this is chapter 5, Aboard the Mothership. The first part of the spectacular interplanetary space trip was summarized in 12 pages of chapter 7 of the preliminary investigation report and will not be repeated here. It may be well, however, to briefly summarize that coverage and make a few corrections to the information available to us at that time. We had recorded several descriptions covering various parts of the trip, but did not actually have all the contact notes in our possession and translated at that time. Those notes, obtained and translated later, showed that upon receiving confirmation of the trip for that morning and the location of the rendezvous site, Meyer set out driving his already loaded moped, being telepathically guided over less crowded route sections, and he arrived on scene at about 9:30, that would be in the morning. By the time he had unloaded his bike and had safely hidden it from accidental discovery, it was after 10 in the morning. He readied his equipment for quick pickup as he waited, and the spacecraft showed up a few minutes after that, and he was taken aboard. He turned and took pictures of his departure before the iris-like opening in the bottom of the ship was closed. They had brought a special camera screen. The first part of that trip was to Venus to check on something, where Meyer took more photos. Here we find that Meyer always took for windows that which was described as multi-purpose sensors. They were sometimes transparent, but they changed colors and clarity of their transparency under different conditions, sometimes even becoming opaque. For that reason, the travelers themselves relied on primarily their 3D viewing screens for sight. It was a special adaptation of this technology within a portable unit that had the illumination adjustment and viewing controls on it, including zoom and viewing frequency control. This unit was similar to the ship's normal viewing screens, which picked up a much wider range of frequencies than our visual range. But this device had been modified to step down to our visible range so that Meyer's camera could record them in our sight frequencies in the colors we can sense. Well, that makes me curious. How do the Pleiadians' eyes compare to ours? Do they have a broader range? Did they genetically modify to get a broader range so they can see ultraviolet and infrared? It sounds like they accommodated him on this flight. Continuing, this also must have given the extraterrestrials control over all that Meyer saw and photographed off the imaging screen of this device. Well, he seems to be suspicious of their motives, the way that's written. I don't know. they penetrated the Venus cloud layer and broke out underneath at what Sannyasi said was about 40 kilometers. Wow! Imagine being 40 kilometers from Venus. The heat! There was clear visibility underneath, and Meyer could see the surface of the planet very clearly, and described a cratered surface with a medium high range of mountains to the right and wide plain to the left. He said he saw no mountains in the polar area. Surprisingly, the Astronomy magazine for August 1976 described almost the same thing from surroundings later made by space probes. These magazine pictures arrived more than 1 year after Meyer's trip. Well, where are Meyer's pictures of Venus? I don't remember ever seeing any. Did I miss them, or do they not exist? He brought his camera, he took pictures. Where are the pictures? Why didn't the Pleiadians have cameras of their own, far advanced of ours? If they record every word spoken, how come they can't record every frame that was ever seen on this trip to Venus or any other place? Next paragraph. The spacecraft approached Mercury, and Meyer took a picture of it through the viewing instrument. After that, they checked on something on one of the satellites of Saturn and returned to Earth in time to observe the Apollo-Soyuz space docking that day at around 4:30 in the afternoon by Meyer's watch. Not bad for one day. I wish to God I was Billy Meyer. Again, Meyer shot pictures of the space docking using the same special viewing screen provided. So he watches it from space? I thought they got back and he watched it on television. He's watching this from space? I wonder what NASA thought of that. Get out of the picture! In the ship's screens, Meyer could see other spacecraft in the vicinity. Other spacecraft in the vicinity there, which did not show up on his special screen. When he asked about this, the ET, he calls it an ET, the Pleiadian Sannyasi said that those other craft were surrounded by energy fields that could only be picked up on special scanners, which his device did not have access to. I don't get it. So he's looking out a window of some kind, and he sees spacecraft. And she tells them that he's not able to see that on his device. So he has a separate device for seeing these things, and it's not showing up there. But he looks out the window, and the sensors pick it up. Geez, there could be thousands of ships around Earth, and we wouldn't even know it. Our science wouldn't even know it. They're that advanced. After that, they proceeded to Gross Rama, which means Great Spacer, Mothership in distant space. Well, I'd like to know where that's parked. It was a huge pyramidal craft with a great central sphere, 10.6 miles in diameter, 17 kilometers approximately, with three auxiliary spheres nearly 4 miles in diameter each, arranged in a triangle on extended legs to one side of the central sphere. What kind of stresses are on those metals? Wow. One was an agricultural model. One was basic materials generator. And the third was a technological manufacturing facility which produced all the finished consumer goods required by the community and equipment. The central sphere was the living center for 144,000 people. I want to go there. I want to read about that. Geez, why did they have to call a press conference and show the ships flying? Just give us a video of this great spacer, Gross Rama, mothership. I must confess that when the 144,000 figure was given to me initially, I was told that it was a rounded figure. It sounded too mystical to me at the time, so I rounded it to 143,000 inhabitants in my preliminary investigation report. That was very stupid. What's the difference? My God, it isn't even 1%. It's about 3/4 of 1%. Now I see why Quetzal told him, don't modify anything, because you're putting out wrong information. There are 144,000 people on this ship. This completely self-contained ship that manufactures all the goods they need, and it produces all the food that they need. Now he admits, that was a mistake on my part, and I take full responsibility for my error. Okay, fine. Forgiven. Actually, as the population is not static, it could have easily has been up to 145,000 also, and still been as accurate as the given 144,000 figure. Now, I wonder how and why their population fluctuates. I would guess death and birth, and I wonder if they die of any kind of disease or accident. Do they have accidents and die? If so, do they know how to pull a soul into another being? Can they clone a human being, I mean one of their people, and put a soul in that? If somebody loses their body, do they replace it with a new one? Do they have all the acids in the brain so they can reproduce that person? Give him back all his memory? I wonder. Now he wants to belabor this issue a little bit more. What if the base figure is correct? And what if the real source of the mystical figure quoted, and what if that is the real source of the mystical figure quoted in the Christian Bible? Well, I'm not familiar with what he's alluding to here. Apparently, the Bible says something about 144,000 people living on a spaceship. Was the Bible influenced by the Pleiadians? I believe it was, because Semyasi said, in the beginning there was thought, and we put down light. And she said we screwed that part up. We know that Jesus was half Pleiadian. His father was Gabriel. His stepfather, Joseph, knew that and married Mary anyway. Next paragraph. The hangar deck alone in the lower levels of the Big Mother ship, it's a big mother, covered square miles of area, and Meyer saw hundreds, perhaps even thousands, an uncountable number of ships of many sizes and types in there. Uncountable number. Wow. When he asked what they did with so many ships, he was told that they may have as many as 500 of those ships out on missions at any given time in our solar system and elsewhere. Clearly, this was a stupendous operation and could have been in existence for 2,000 years. We don't know how long the Pleiadians have had a mothership near, well, in this solar system. This one's docked in at Saturn. Now, I recall the Baavians had a spaceship in Saturn, and Riley Martin has been there and tells about it. But he's charging admission now to reveal anything that he knows or has experienced. I have not been able to find any books written by him, but there were a lot of interviews. I wonder who else is in the Saturn area. Now, the Baavians said they were there because they could get all the materials they needed from the rings. If they needed a particular metal, it was there. Don't forget, Saturn is a gigantic planet. Much, much larger than Earth. I believe it's number two. I think Jupiter's the big one. It's so big that it's a sun. It puts out more light than it absorbs, which makes it a sun. Not a planet. They were taken in a transport vehicle inside the Great Spacer to a control center where Meyer was introduced to Semyasi's father, Ptah. See, I told you that was her father, who did not speak the German language and used a translating device to communicate with Meyer. Ptah said the Great Spacer was already moving toward their transmit position and showed Herr Meyer, Mr. Meyer, some of the control instruments. That is where we left off in the preliminary report. So, daughter and father are on a mission together. Now, how did that happen? Aren't you curious about that? And now Meyer is seated in his little lean-to den. What does that mean? And he has made himself ready for reception. Semyasi greets him. Today is your great day, Meyer says. After all you have told me, I feel the same way. Semyasi says, you had to think about what would be expected, but now I must explain for this time that you will have to keep silence about certain concerns. At a later time, I will be able to allow you to tell about the experience. For that, I will leave out of the transmission of the report certain things of which you may not speak. But come now. First, we make a journey through your solar system.
Cool.
We go to the ship and are lifted up inside the transport beam. And only a few seconds after this, the ship floats up high, and I shoot from about 50 meters height some dia pictures, that probably means motion pictures, of the environment of the departure point. I take the pictures partly from straight above and partly from the side. I can take these pictures still through the entrance hatch as we climb very slowly higher. After shooting the pictures, Sannyasi closes the hatch. And within seconds, the ship rushes up to several kilometers high without my noticing any pressure or other change. Everything is just like I was standing on solid ground on the Earth. Different sudden alternations of the course produced no bodily effect, though I can see through the windows aboard that at different times we shoot along in the craziest movements, like a great pendulum. Now, Meyer says it's just like walking on solid ground on the Earth, so I wonder, what is the gravity on their home planet or their spaceship? Do they adjust it for each person? Did they modify Earth so that Earth's gravity would be the same as their planet when we were placed here or whatever brought us here? It's obvious that we are aliens and we are just like the Pleiadians. They look identical to us. I don't know much about their culture. But I have many, many questions. And I know that Billy Meyer had many questions, too. The last paragraph here, it was from those transmissions and subsequent discussions that we abstracted the part of this trip published in our preliminary report. As soon as the trip got underway, Meyer busied himself examining in detail the special device the ETs had provided for his photographing efforts. Such accommodations. How much is one night in this hotel? This viewing screen looks to me like clear glass through which everything outside can be observed. Only I can see that this whole viewing screen is very finely scanned, sharpened image, similar to laser-scanned photographs. Amazing. The size of the screen was about 50 centimeters by 50 centimeters, and since 1 centimeter is 2.54 inches, I think that's about 20 inches by 20 inches. While the color radiation device is installed inside the side of it and recessed, and thus I could not examine its inner workings. Besides this device, there were many most different apparatus of all kind, all around the cockpit room, installed within a circular control console and in the walls. These strange-appearing apparatus, should be apparati, which I had already seen on the first flight, quite evidently serve for the guiding and controlling of the beam ship, while evidently so serving as well for exploration devices, distance meters, radiation control means, and other things, and play an important role in the operation of the flight machine. I would love to see some photographs of the interior of this ship. All of the viewing and picture display screens differ basically from all other known to me apparatus of the same character of Earth origin. All of the forms, symbols, and figures in these screens were displayed in beautiful and often fantastic colors and arrays, and were displayed in depth contrary to the known to me Earth display or picture screens, which in practice are only able to show displays of signs and pictures by foreground, flat two-dimensional no-depth images, while these screens here showed everything in vivid three-dimensional effect. Unbelievable. Like they were materially real. Wow. And not only generated by impulses, we must remember that this was all taking place in 1975, before we had multicolor liquid crystal displays and three-dimensional television.